There are some things that the rest of Australia knows all about Darwin. People know that it was bombed by the Japanese during the Second World War. They know it was home, or it is home, to the Salty Crocodile and, I guess, to fictional characters such as Mick Dundee. It was almost blown away when Cyclone Tracy hit the place on Christmas Day 1974. But what does the rest of the world know about Darwin's art scene? How does its multicultural makeup, its intense weather, its spectacular landscape affect the writers who live there? Sasha Grushin is the Sir William Dobell Professor of Art History at the Australian National University, and he's a frequent visitor to the Top End. He met up with Suzanne Donisthorpe on the lovely Darwin Harbour to discuss the city's art scene.
The Territorian art scene is really characterised by communities, and they're very racially diverse communities. Quite often we have a tendency of putting things into compartments. Say, well, this is Indigenous art, this is Indigenous art from this area, and it has never been in any way exposed or changed in response to other traditions, which is, of course, a load of rubbish. From the year dot, all artists respond in different ways to the challenge of new technologies, new materials, and also the change in evolution in fundamental value systems. And likewise, reciprocally, I think the non-Indigenous people, which I find quite fascinating, they're more so than probably any other place that I'm aware of in Australia. In the territory, there is a specific Territorian sensibility, this sort of wry humour.
Yes, well, there's characters here. I mean, this is the land of the maverick, the larger-than-life character, the Crocodile Dundee, whatever you like to call it. So that obviously would have some kind of impact on the style.
It does, but I think just the landscape itself is so vast, so challenging, that within a generation, people sort of adapt and change to this landscape. And that's one of the things that I find quite fascinating about it, because there is a certain, let's call it, Territorian tradition in art emerging, which cannot be simplified into Indigenous and non-Indigenous categories. It is precisely this melting pot. It does include Islander culture, does include Asian culture, people coming in from Indonesia, white European settlement here, a Slav ingredient, as well as a hugely significant Indigenous. And it's this sort of bringing together of all these elements, which I find absolutely fascinating about the, particularly the Darwin art scene, which probably is the most vibrant one.
Are there problems of appropriation, particularly for white artists appropriating Aboriginal motifs within their work and taking up, you know, ways of seeing the land through Aboriginal eyes that they don't own, that aren't theirs?
Appropriation is a very, very complicated area. We can put to one side people who steal things, people who steal and fake motifs. In other words, they pretend to be somebody else. Now, that sort of appropriation is very, very simple. We're dealing with a small criminal element.
Your tea towel art, in a way.
That's right. The people who will photographically lift motifs and put them into another context and then claim it's theirs. But the other area of appropriation is really more in the area of creative adaptation. And that's I think, where a lot of very, very interesting things happen. It's not even so much in the main motif or the main area, but it's almost like in the spaces between them. You see something, and then you've got something just a bit outside it, and the really exciting thing that's happening is in the space between the two. And this increasingly, I think, is a case with art being produced in the territory. And as I say, it applies to Indigenous artists, quite often working with the challenge of new materials, quite often working with in collaboration with art advisors, quite often working in close collaboration with master printers. And it's silly to try to segregate these things. That's what makes the whole tradition so living, so important, so dramatically exciting.
Do you think it's tough for non-Aboriginal artists to, I don't know, get any traction? I mean, because there is so much interest in particularly traditional art, do you think they have a tough time being seen?
Art's always been a tough business. I don't think it's tougher here than anywhere else. But one point which I'd like to make, and it's probably a rather controversial one for which I will be lynched, I think quite often the landscape itself clones and changes the person. And on a number of instances when I've spoken to artists who may not be Indigenous and are saying, well, wait a second, why are you painting in this particular manner? And they will point out the spinifex. They'll point out to other landscape elements. And I think if you live in the landscape and if the landscape enters you, quite often you do come to pretty obvious conclusions. But each artist's work is always built on the marks of other artists. There's no such thing as starting naive originality. I mean, it's a wonderful concept, but it belongs in the same realm as tooth fairies.
Is Darwin still a frontier town? Is this where the real Australia is? Is this where we can find the essence of Australia for artists to draw inspiration from?
Well, as a prejudiced Melbournian, the answer is no. I think some of the greatest art in Australia is being made today in the suburbs of Melbourne. The question of a frontier is a very complex one, because we're talking about physical frontiers. And in that case, Darwin is really quite suburban.
But however, it does, I don't know, it is at the edge of the continent. It looks to Asia. On the other side of the desert, there's a very strong sense of the land here. I mean, it's not Sydney and Melbourne.
No, of course not. But is it any more remote than, say, Perth? Is it any more remote than North Queensland? It is hugging the coast. Where I think it's more exciting is the people who don't actually live in Darwin, but people who actually live in the interior. You're just forced to come to terms with the environment, much more so than we're in a place where you can switch on the air conditioning when it gets too hot.
But you do feel the land here. You do feel a sense of the land in Darwin in a way that you don't in the big cities, in the territory particularly. I mean, and that must filter through to everything that happens here artistically.
Do you say that because for you it feels exotic?
It feels less paved, it feels less contained, it feels, you say suburban, and yes, there is, we're looking around the very manicured grass, and the ocean has been put back behind a barrier to stop the crocodiles and the stingrays, etc. But 100k from Darwin, it's a different situation altogether. You go out into the bush and you see the escarpment country, and you do feel the land in a way I don't think that you do in the same way down south.
I think that's the point I was probably clumsily alluding to, is not so much Darwin, but outside of Darwin. That if you go into Arnhem Land, if you go into the Kimberleys, yes, of course, you do have a very, very incredible confrontation with the environment.
And you realise that it is black man's land.
I'll see that, yes. There is an attractive theory that probably we encounter very strongly in D.H. Lawrence's Kangaroo, but also in quite a few of the novels of Patrick White, of white people being intruders into what is a black continent. I'm not certain that thesis is terribly valid, or we have enormous sympathy for it today, because firstly, it does in some ways put Indigenous people into a category which I think they don't particularly want to be in, as people being one with nature, living somewhere in the outback. And secondly, it also does cut out a great number of people who actually are living in the outback, who are of non-Indigenous origins and who feel the land passionately as that. Of course, for us as a city person, going out into Arnhem Land, going out to Tarkala country, or going out into the central desert, it is inspiring, it is strange, it's unlike any other experience you've had, and just sleeping under the stars in the desert is one of the most wondrous experiences you can ever have. And but that's because I'm a tourist. I'm a temporary visitor. Should I be living in that landscape for 30, 40 years, perhaps I will work out a different affiliation with it. And there's certainly Australian artists who actually have become one with the landscape. You can think of the Queensland artist Bill Robinson, for example, who has worked out a great affinity with the rainforests of Queensland and did produce some absolutely amazing pictures. And I think the same is true of people in the territory who actually devote themselves to living out in the bush almost regardless of the ethnicity. And as I started in the beginning saying, what I do find attractive in the territory is that it's not so much the domain of Anglo-Saxons, it's not so much the domain of Europeans. It's this great mixture. A lot of Asian people are here, and the Asian element cannot be underestimated. People coming from Indonesia, people coming from the islands, islander culture, and quite often when you're actually speaking to artists, as I've had the privilege of doing over quite a number of years in the territory, who are non-Indigenous, their origins are incredibly complex. And I think that's probably more strongly reflected than in our traditions of, say, Brisbane, Sydney or Melbourne, where quite often we do have, of course, a very rich tradition of multiculturalism, but say, well, this is actually a Lebanese artist, or this is a Greek artist, or this is a Russian artist, rather than this, than saying, well, this person is actually has got a bit of this, bit of this, this, bit of this, and a bit of Aboriginal, and all these things thrown in. And this does, I think, give the territory a certain flavour. It's the antithesis to this idea of racial purity. And I suppose in a very simplistic way, quite often when I look at an exhibition of contemporary art from the territory, there's an enormous amount of energy, vitality, and everything.
So it reflects the land that, in a way, is itself, in fact.
The monsoon cycles, obviously, are a great act of regeneration.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you.
Professor Sasha Grushin, the Sir William Dobell Professor of Art History at the Australian National University, speaking there to Suzanne Donisthorpe on a very tropical evening in Darwin. Well, that's the program for today. We do this weekdays at 10 a.m. and we repeat the show the following morning at 2. And we're online all the time. You'll find audio and pictures and extra information about the stories, and of course an open information to you to have your say about the issues that we've been discussing on the show.